This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Steve Jorgensen and Indie Book Publishing. This is J. Douglas Barker. Today we visit with author Nancy Glasscock Sneed to discuss a book she has written titled Grains of Sand. This is a Westbow publication. Welcome, Nancy. And tell us, how is your day going?
I'm fine, thank you.
Tell me a little bit about this book. What type of book is it? I have glanced through it and I know what it is, but I want you to explain to our listeners what your book is about.
All right. It's a book of poetry which chronicles a family vacation from packing through all the fun times at the beach and then back home with the photo album even years later and being able to relive the trip. But the whole story is told through poetry and some beautiful watercolor illustrations.
The artwork is quite charming and certainly matches the poetry that's included in your book.
I do think the illustrations are beautiful.
And who was that done by?
That was done by Lynn Waters Griffey, who is a friend of mine and is a retired teacher also.
Both of you have an education background. How long did you teach in the education system?
I was in the system for 37 years. I started out as a third grade classroom teacher for 9 years, and then I received my master's and reading certification. So then I was a reading specialist for 20 years and really got to know the children's literature through that and through going to the International Reading Association conference every year where I met some of my favorite children's authors. And then I went back to school later in my career and got my certification in guidance and counseling. And so then I finished out my career as an elementary school counselor. So that was the last 8 years of my career.
You've had
a long time in education.
Very interesting history. And you also wrote some plays while you were in the education system.
I did. I wrote several plays for students to perform. And on a couple of occasions, they were school-wide productions. And we actually toured to different locations. One of the productions that I wrote, my principal wanted to enter a play about some famous Clarksvillian that nobody would know anything about named Cave Johnson. And he actually was the originator of the postage stamp. That was his claim to fame, but most people had never heard of him. So we did a whole period piece on Cave Johnson. I researched his life and wrote a play around it. And then children from the school auditioned and got parts. And we traveled all over the county filming in different places. And everybody was involved. The art teacher, the music teacher taught the children a dance from that era. And so it just all came together in this big production of the Cave Johnson story and the postage stamp. And then we've done some other productions too for the community. But, you know, that was just all done as part of what I did in my career and enjoy doing.
And because you were dealing with children, this book was an outcropping of that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I have written for children for years, and actually, this book started out as a children's book because that's what I write mostly, and I write for my grandchildren now and for other children. So I started off writing these poems, and you know they were cute and funny, and the beach is one of my favorite places in the world, and then I was writing some poetry just for myself, things I felt, things I observed and experienced while I was at the beach. And the more I looked at this collection of poems, I thought, well, this doesn't have to be totally a children's book. This can be for family.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some poems in this book that will appeal to to moms and dads as well as children. So it's all tied together as the beach experience through poetry. But hopefully it's a fun book.
And this beach experience didn't happen in Tennessee, where you're from.
No, it did not. Actually, my beach experience started years ago. I think the first vacation I took with my family was to Miami Beach when I was 7 years old. I grew up in a very small town in Kentucky, and I was not from a wealthy family, wealthy in things besides money. But anyway, that was the first time I saw the beach, and I've just been enthralled with it ever since. And that was our favorite destination as a family, was the beach. And we went, even when, after I had a family and my sister had her family, we always tried to get together once a year with my parents and spend time at the beach. And that has continued on with my children and my grandchildren. It's just a fun time together. It's one of the most relaxing places you can be, I think. And it's just a time to tune in and get rid of all the things that come between us, even in our time together, like our cell phones and games and all those other things. It's just a time to be together and enjoy each other's company and make some memories that are going to last a lifetime.
Well, in a moment, I'm going to ask you to maybe select something from your book so that our listeners can get an idea of your poetry. But in the interim, I wanted to ask you, how did you get motivated? What stirred you to write your book and publish it?
Well, one thing was my love of poetry. And there's not a great deal of poetry in the children's market. And I know from the many years that I taught school and taught reading that children enjoy poetry. And so I just decided I had this collection of beach poems going that actually were not meant to be included in a book when I first started on them. They were just, you know, little side things I would write. And I thought, well, I'd send that to a magazine later or whatever. But then after I accumulated this whole assortment of poems, I thought, you know, that's something that there's not a lot of out there for children or families. So that's really what started it. These poems were accumulated over, you know, several visits to the beach, and then I just compiled them, and they are from, as I said, the packing through the whole beach trip to looking back at the photos even years later.
Well, can we impose upon you to read one of your favorite selections?
Yes, you certainly can. This is one called The Friendly Lobster. And, you know, I always wonder when we go to these restaurants where the lobsters are in the tanks and, you know, you choose the one you want. I always thought, you know, you're trying to choose the best one, but it's really not a compliment for the lobster. It's not going to work out well for him. So
that's true.
I think that's where this idea came from. The Friendly Lobster. We're going out for a dinner tonight to a very fine restaurant with seafood delights. Well, I ordered grouper or swordfish or clams, mahi-mahi served with a side of hot yams. Will I have oysters or crab cakes divine? It's hard to decide on what I will dine, but I won't order lobster. That's clear as can be, because the one in the tank just waved at me. As I walked by his tank, I plainly saw he lifted his arm and waved his big claw. It was just as clear as it could be, and I can't eat something that waved at me. Just bring me some scallops, crab legs I crave, but I can't eat anything friendly that waves.
That's charming. The artwork is equally as charming.
Yes, I think the artwork is wonderful. You can just see that lobster, and you can imagine that he could almost wave.
And how long did it take you to assemble all of this fine writing that you've done?
Oh, well, actually, it probably a couple of years and several visits to the beach. But as I said, it didn't start out as a book. It just started out as a, you know, a poem here and a poem there, and then it just all kind of came together.
And this, what do you want readers to take away from this book? This is certainly a very relaxing read. Are there other things that you'd like them to discover?
Well, of course, the main thing is just fun with the family. I think these are great poems to be read aloud, either prior to a trip to the beach, or anybody that has been to the beach can enjoy reading about this. But I think the main thing I try to emphasize in the book, besides just the fun of a beach trip and a vacation and just the way poetry sounds rolling off your tongue, is just how important it is to create those bonds with your family and those special memories. Because what children really want from parents is not stuff or things. You know, it's not the latest iPhone, or the thing that's most important to them and what will help build their character and their self-confidence more than anything is just the time that a parent spends with that child. So I think the idea I'm trying to get across in this book is just create those good memories and those good bonds that are going to last forever. And I can't remember where this quote is from, but, you know, the two best things you can give your children are roots and wings. Well, this is part of building the roots, those bonds and those boundaries and those fun times that can be called upon, and that's going to help when they get to the wings part.
Excellent. Powerfully said. You've also noted that in our world, happiness is too often equated with possessions and wealth. And
right.
Neither are necessary for happiness. This book emphasizes happiness created through relationships and time spent together.
Yes.
Can't be said any better than that.
Well, I truly believe it, and I have truly seen it in my experience through the years with children and in counseling. You know, it's nice to have things, and I know they create a fuss for stuff, but that's not really where the happiness comes from. I guarantee they'd rather have the undivided attention of a parent than something the parent has bought for them.
Absolutely. And as you get older, grandparents can provide that to kids and then send them home.
That's true. You're not so worried about if your responsibilities. You can just enjoy them. And I truly think that's one of my greatest legacies to pass on, is just to be the very best grandmother I can be, and that's been one of my goals, so I'm still trying to accomplish that one.
I have family members doing the same thing. In fact, the dog follows this grandma around more than it follows the grandpa around, if you get my drift.
Well, that's a tribute right there.
Absolutely. Your book's a charming read. How does your book, besides the charming artwork, what sets it apart from the rest?
I think what makes it different is that it is a story, but it's told completely through poetry. From beginning to end, from packing to the photo album, it's all poems throughout, but you get the gist that it is a family vacation.
And were there any challenging parts to writing this book other than assembling the poetry?
There are some poems in here that, I mean, a lot of them are funny and a lot of them are really gonna tickle the youngest family members, but there's some that are poignant too, and especially the one I was writing about the photo album, because you know, that brought back a lot of memories, and you know, people that have been on these vacations through the years that are no longer living. And it's sad, but aren't you happy you have those wonderful memories that bind you to your family and the ones you love and those great memories to look back on? Because, you know, it's just part of what makes you who you are. So yeah, some of those parts were difficult, but satisfying to write also.
Beautifully said. The title of the book, Grains of Sand, Beach Poems by Nancy Glasscock Sneed. Nancy, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Tell me where we can get a copy of your book.
You can get a copy from Amazon, or you can buy it for your Kindle.
And do you have a website, perhaps?
I do. I do have a website. It's just Nancy Glasscox Mead.
Very good. Thanks again for joining us and for sharing this inspirational book and the wonderful sketches and artwork that's included in it.
Thank you so much.
For Steve Jorgensen, Indie Book Publishing, and Westbo Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, everybody. This is Pete Six of Beatles and Beyond. Why don't we all come together and hear some of the tracks off the latest Beatles release on this radio station? Yes, why don't you look up the schedules on this radio station and join me and Beatles listeners everywhere to hear these latest releases from the Beatles on Beatles and Beyond with Pete Dix.
Connect with Juliana and connect with what lies beneath. Friday afternoons at 4 or 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Juliana is a marriage, family, and child therapist who wants people to connect. Connect with what lies beneath, those truths and answers. And through her counseling practice, she has helped others find their personal power and fulfill their dreams. And she wants to do the same for you. Here on Connect with Juliana. Through intimate discussions, intriguing subject matters, and the expertise of her guests. For more on the show and Juliana, check out her webpage. Connect with Juliana in media.com. Juliana will cover it all. Nothing is off limits. She wants to know what matters to you. Make the connection. Tune into TogiNet to connect with Juliana to find out the facts that could be hidden beneath the surface. Connect with Juliana on TogiNet to make a quality connection in your life. Friday afternoons at 4, 3 Central on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Drag Them Down, The Falling of an Angel. And the author is Sarah Knipp, and Sarah joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Sarah.
Hey, you guys, Steve.
Great to have you with us all the way from Scarborough, Australia. Where's Scarborough?
Scarborough. It's kind of on the edge of Western Australia.
Western Australia. Okay. Well, Drag Them Down. Let's just do a little overview here just to give everybody an idea. This is a fiction thriller, a murder thriller, to see the dark underworld of crime in Australia. We've got a family that's murdered in front of the hero, and even his fiance is murdered right before his eyes. And of course, that changes his whole world, as we can all just imagine. But there's darker secrets here than most can imagine. As you say, when night drowns the city, hell comes out to play. So we'll find out more about that. But first of all, Sarah, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, and why you wrote the book.
About me? Well, I was born in Canberra, which is the other side of Australia, the eastern states. And I grew up there for about 16 years. And on the drive to go across eastern states to Western Australia, I came up with this idea, actually, on the drive, because I got that bored. So I came up with this idea of making this, you know, superhero that wasn't really a superhero. He's kind of a vigilante in a way. And I just expanded from there. And it's just been expanding ever since and just becoming this big, huge story that's never ending. So I thought I'd write it down, maybe it'd make it a bit easier for my brain to absorb.
Well, you call the city Broken Hill. You say it's home to crime, sex, and drugs. Is this a real place or a fictional place or based on some place?
It is based on the place. I took the name from a New South Wales area. So that's in the eastern states where I live near. And it depends who you ask around. Some people say Broken Hill's pretty run down, but I think it's a fine town. I've been there a little bit and there's nothing wrong with it. But I just like the name of it. I thought that just gave it a bit more depth to the city.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about Daniel Spencer. He's our hero. He's the main character. Tell us about him.
He is. He's got everything going for him. You know, he's got this fiance on the way, and then he's got this amazing, caring family. And he is a great guy. He's had a little bit of a kind of a dark past, you know, a bit of a rebellious teenager, as every other teenager is. But he's had this quite normal path throughout his life, and now it's all kind of crumbling down to this poor guy has to deal with all this stuff getting taken away from him so quickly. And it's kind of, he tries to pick himself back up, and sadly he doesn't pick himself back up very well. He doesn't take it too well, and he kind of goes a bit too extreme, and that's what I wrote about.
Well, we can only imagine what we would go through if we saw our family murdered in front of us. What set up that scene for us?
The scene. They're outside and celebrating this new engagement of Daniel and his new fiancée, Amy White. And, you know, they're having a great time, the kids playing around everywhere, and then suddenly Amy's in the kitchen and then she hears a knock at the door. So she answers the door thinking it might be another family member or something. And all of a sudden there's this loud bang out from inside, from the outside to the outside. And Amy's, of course, been shot. And then these four men just come bursting into Daniel's life and just destroying everything in the way of him, and he falls down into the pool. There's a good description of it in the book, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but it's just it's his vision of what he sees. It's not really, you don't get visions of everyone else, you just get his vision of what he sees around the place. But that scene is just so impactful to him,
so,
and that's
adults,
what I wanted to take out of it.
Adults and children are killed?
Yeah, and children as well. So everyone practically accepts him. So he has to deal with all of that.
So the one behind all this is the biggest crime lord in Australia. Tell us about him. And I guess his son, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Victor Ramirez? Yes. He's the son of the biggest gang player in Australia, but he kind of operates in Broken Hill, and he's a bit of a cocky young man who thinks that he can get anything he wants whenever he wants. And I wanted to kind of make that extreme as well, like how far would someone go to be absolutely known, or, you know, have his reputation, you know, to make sure his reputation wasn't destroyed or anything like that, just slightly, just to give him such an ego. And that's what I created Victor as. He's just this extreme ego guy who just wants everything, and he'll get it no matter what.
So Daniel, as you put it, must decide just how far he will go to avenge his lost family, basically his whole life, his future, obviously his loved one, Amy. So he's a troubled man now.
Yes. he's just plummeted down into the abyss, practically.
Mm-hmm.
He's got really nothing else to live for, so he's just going to try and, you know, take something back at least to get some feeling back, I suppose. So he just drives himself into this absolute darkness, and he just doesn't emerge back from it, which is a shame, but because he's a really lovely character. But I destroyed him practically, because I thought it would be interesting to see what would happen along the way down.
Who is Saint Lucifer mentioned at the beginning of the book?
He's a character that, because I mentioned before that this is a huge story, and you know the book is like very, very, it's like the very beginning of it. Saint Lucifer is a character later on in the book, and he becomes the main character in a way. But I thought I'd just touch on it in the beginning of the book, just so it just has that kind of feel that he's kind of present already, and then later on, if I did get a chance to write more, then of course he'll pop up. But I just wanted to give that present in the first book.
Yeah, yes, I have quoted you, hell comes out to play, and then you say, what will emerge from the cracks in the earth to drag the light and life from the residents of this once peaceful town? So, what does emerge from the cracks in the earth?
What emerges? Darkness, I suppose. I would think the undead, at least. I think it's just more of a concept, like an idea that the city's underworld kind of emerges from it. So the city's quite at day. It's just a normal town, but then at night time it becomes a bit darker, and you know drugs and all that, and prostitutes and drug dealers and gang members and all that really start to play at night, because you know they like it and they don't get seen as much, and it's easier to work their magic. But that's the idea of it, is that all the underground people come out from the cracks.
Now, Daniel crosses paths with two detectives, Lisa Watts and Kevin Archer. What kind of a role do they play in all of this?
Well, they're the ones who they don't get first called to the scene, but they're the main detectives who try and find out what happened to Daniel's family. And there's only a small group of detectives in Broken Hill, so they're two of the main ones who get most of the homicides. So mostly, if someone dies, they're pretty much going to be on the scene, having to deal with all these people dying. Daniel, of course, they come across Daniel Spencer's family, which is huge, huge crime for them to do, and they try their best to get to the bottom of it. Sadly, it's not as easy as just saying, "Oh, it's Daniel," or "it's someone else." You know, you have to piece all these pieces together of the puzzle.
What would you say is your favorite character?
Me? Because this story is bigger to me than anything. I like Amy White. She's just grown so much, even though she dies in the beginning. As a character, for me, I've just grown her in such a way that I really like her. She's just one of these characters that, I don't know, she's not much like me, but she's just such a great person, a great character, I should say, that I love her, she's great.
Now, some of the themes in your book, we've already mentioned about the amount of drug use, all the things that happen at night. You also talk about how the rich own the world. Now, tell us more about that.
It's this whole kind of, I don't know, I've got this idea in my head, and it's still there because I keep seeing it. But I grew up in a life where practically the rich become richer and the poorer become poorer, and it's still kind of pretty much the same thing. And I feel like every time I keep seeing it, you know, the rich can buy their way into anything, and sadly, if they want more money, then they'll take the poor's money and they make them poorer. Of course, they get richer. So I went onto that storyline where I'm like, well, I want to put that into it because something so relevant in my eyes. And I think I really wanted to just put it out there so I'd feel a bit better about the whole situation. But, and that's just what my opinion is. But,
and you know, tied to that, you also have corruption in government and law.
And that's usually you see it in movies and all that, so I thought that would be pretty cool to mention. But yeah, it's just one of those things where it's just it's kind of connected because, you know, government and, you know, lawyers and all this other stuff is kind of surrounded by money, isn't it? So it was just another, you know, add-on to that, and that's all I really did.
Well, it's got a lot of thrilling action in it. It's obviously very, very, very dramatic, this murder thriller, this story of Daniel avenging the murder of his family and his fiance. Why don't you give us a closing thought about your book?
A closing thought. It's a great book. You should read it.
It's a page-turner, I'm sure.
Yeah, a page turner. I don't have much thoughts on it. I just think it's definitely an experience that just never stops playing with my mind, and I just keep going over it. So it'll be interesting to see if other people have the same thoughts.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing. How do we get your book?
You go on to Amazon, and also Balboa Press sell it as well.
And you can go to literally, you can order it from any online retailer or walk in off the street and order it as well, any bookstore.
Sure, you go on eBay as well.
Right, right, exactly. Drag Them Down, The Falling of an Angel, the title of the book. Sarah, again, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, great. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing. And we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, Things I Wish My Mother Had Said, or maybe she did. And the author is Jeannie Lee Perrone, and Jeannie joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Balboa Press. Hello, Jeannie.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
Well, I'm just great. And this book, my goodness, motivational. It's a self-empowerment book, short essays and original artwork. But really, it's a tribute to your mom, isn't it? She was an amazing woman and just... It's basically her legacy, this book.
It really is. It really is because we had a special relationship. My mother and I, she was a phenomenal parent as I was growing up. But when I became an adult, she was really more of a friend. And when I had my children, she was already sick. She was diagnosed with breast cancer in 89. And my children were 3 and 4 when she passed on in 2000. And so my biggest worry as a young mother was, how in the world am I going to be able to be as good a mother to my children? Am I going to remember the things that she said? It was almost like I wish I had a tape recorder and I could have just said, "Mom, talk," you know? So
right.
It's that I don't want my kids to have that worry when they get older. It's like they sort of have I mean, obviously, I think I'm a little deeper person than 56 pages, but they have a basic foundation of what I'm all about. So
there's some, as you call them, universal lessons in the book, simple techniques for just lightening up and enjoying life more, even in the midst of real big challenges, obviously.
Yeah.
And on top of all that, you had leukemia.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I speak from experience, and I think, you know, it's one thing when everything's going really well, it's easy to say, I'm a happy person. But it's the test of character, and this is something my mother did used to say to me, the test of one's character is when the stuff hits the fan, how then do you react? And the thing is, you have to remember that everything that comes to you is something that obviously you've attracted in some way or another as I don't know, as a lesson or as a, you know, an obstacle to overcome, a little detour to navigate through. But life is teaching you things and making you grow. And so when the stuff happens, you really have to find the strength within. And I think we all have that strength. And that's the thing that I learned from my diagnosis, because my mom died 4 months after I was diagnosed. So you can imagine having a 3- and 4-year-old, a marriage that was, you know, crumbling, and then suddenly to get hit with a diagnosis of my own, that was a lot to deal with. And my father was also battling some health issues, and, you know, on and on. And that I could have let that crush me, or I could say to myself, I've got to find a way to have a good life. No matter how long I have on this planet, I got to find a way to make this work. And so that's what I tried to do. You just look for the best possible aspect of wherever you find yourself, and then you claw your way up little by little to feeling good. And it worked for me, and I want it to work for other people too.
Well, it may sound kind of trite, but even in the worst storm, the sun is still shining. You might be able to see it, right? It's
right.
Still there.
Right. Exactly.
And that's what you grabbed a hold of.
That's what I think you have to grab a hold of, is the brightest possible. And I mean, depending on circumstances, and I mean, I will admit I've had a really, really good life. I've been very fortunate in my life. But, you know, you have to, whatever circumstance you find yourself in, you can either moan and complain about some little picky aspect of it, or you can say, isn't it amazing that, you know, I find myself in this situation and I have all the tools I need right inside me to navigate through it and to come out bigger and stronger and wiser in the process, and maybe help a few people later on with my story, which was another thing when I was diagnosed. I was like, you know, I'm going through all of this stuff. Someday I hope that I can, you know, first off, survive it. Second of all, if I do survive it, I want to help other people to realize that they can survive no matter what the details are of their situation. They can survive it too. So.
And your leukemia is in remission.
I am in remission, yes. Yes, very thankfully. I've been in remission, actually, since 2001. I went into a pretty solid remission. I did take conventional medicine as well as some holistic treatments, which I continue the holistic. I'm probably way healthier now than I ever would have been had I not gotten leukemia, because I take really, really good care of myself now, physically, emotionally, spiritually, the whole package. And fortunately, I have a very good conventional medical team that I trust that works with me as well. And so it's, I think the whole package goes hand in hand, and I'm very healthy. So thankfully, yes.
What's the significance of the clown pictures on the dedication page and at the end of the book?
Well, those are for my mom. My mother was amazing in the face of her illness. She was always very, very positive. You know, she lived for 11 years. They had given her, say, 2 or 3 when the cancer spread. And she lived 11 years with this diagnosis, and she really lived a good 11 years. It wasn't until the very end it became difficult. But to get her through and to distract herself from the things that might have frightened her, she was an artist, and so she would draw these beautiful little colorful clowns, and she'd frame them, and my father and she would go to art festivals and whatnot, and she'd sell them, and she just was having a blast with them. And before she died, she had said, oh, I would love to put out some kind of children's book or something with my clowns. And she asked if I could help her, and I was like, at the time, I didn't know how I would even go about doing that. And so for, you know, 13 years, from the time she passed away in 2000. It's been mulling in my subconscious. How am I going to do? I want to do something, and I wanted to sort of tell my story as well and help other people possibly with what I've gone through. So suddenly it just kind of all the pieces came together, and so those clowns are clowns that my mom drew, and we got her published. So.
The original artwork, the original artwork that you have done in the book? Describe that artwork. What is it trying to say?
For me, when I'm processing through sort of philosophical things that I may be struggling with or trying to understand better, I start to doodle. And so I have stacks of some doodles, and the doodles for me help me to formulate in words what I'm trying to say, and I think it helps me to make my words concise and clear, and for me it just brings life to the words. So my daughter, looking at them, calls them swirly blobs, so that name sort of stuck with them, so I call them swirly blobs now, and basically they just, to me, symbolize what it is I'm trying to say. So I have a little daily advice thing on Facebook, and every day I draw a unique little swirly blob and little tidbit of, you know, advice that I think is pertinent. It's certainly sometimes things I need to be reminded of during the day. And it's really been fun. And it's, you know, I just think they're just little happy beings that hopefully can uplift and maybe make somebody smile.
So the book has these, what would you call them, just these written statements about life. They're very short.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep. They're basically, I tried to hit in a very concise way some of the main points that I think help to contribute to a happy, healthy life. And they're not unique by any means, because they're just basic truths, I think. And sometimes we just, in the hubbub of today's world, we need to be reminded a little bit of some of the simple truths that are there. And they make it, when you do remember them, you say, that makes sense. And then you put things into practice, and your life kind of magically seems to improve. So it's little simple truths, I think, that people need to be reminded of sometimes.
Jeannie, why don't you share with us one of your tidbits of wisdom, one of your philosophies of life that are in your book?
Okay, great. I would love to read for you. How about tell your story the way you want it to be? Many people go through their lives observing situations, circumstances, and events, and telling narratives about these events to everyone they meet. Now, if the situation is a pleasing one, it is very beneficial to tell the story repeatedly. It makes you feel good to remember the pleasant details. However, if the circumstances in your life are not exactly ideal or even painful, you really don't want to rehash them over and over, thereby giving more energy to them. There is a way to live your life and make subtle changes in the way you tell your story. I want to share a very powerful and effective tool for redirecting your life. I have used this tool regularly for many years, and I'm amazed at how effective it is. The tool is called intention writing. Intention writing, or as some call it, scripting, is a process by which you write a description of things in your life, but you write it in such a way that you're telling the story as you want it to be. Your writing may not be exactly how things are presently, but it reflects things the way you want them to be. To begin, buy yourself an attractive journal or notebook, one that makes you happy just to look at it. Think about a facet of your life, perhaps your current job or a relationship. Now take a moment to envision this subject the way you want it to be. Your ideal version. As you write, tell your story in the present tense. Say things like, I have the perfect job, the requirements of the position I hold suit my abilities and strengths perfectly. I love going to work. I have the most amazing and enjoyable people around me, etc. Continue writing the most positive version of your story that you can. Always write in the present tense, because you want to really feel like what you desire is already happening. During a particular time in my life, I wrote every night in my pretty journal about a situation that I wanted to change. I wrote from my heart about the way I truly wanted this to be. Each night, I would read what I had written before and smile as I read. Over time, it seemed so natural that what I was reading really was true. It is interesting to me that most of what I have written about in the past has come to fruition in my life. This tool helps you to focus your thoughts. As we already know, our thoughts create our reality, and if we can focus them towards the positive, we can create quite the nice little life for ourselves. You are painting the picture of your life. You have all the tools you need to create a joyous, colorful masterpiece. A painting, like life, has more depth and meaning because of the light and shadows it contains. You hold the brush, you paint the picture. Everything you view as reality right now started as a dream or a thought. You are living the creations you brought forth from previous visualizations and wants. In this present moment, your now, if you can continue to tell the story of your life as you want it to be, you will be creating from this new, improved place. Because you are deliberately seeking more joy in the present moment, you are painting your picture on a better canvas with better quality paints.
Very well said. Very well said.
Thank you.
Well, it's all about, like you put it, training your thoughts and quieting your mind.
Yes. Yeah, it's so important. It really is. Your thoughts are really, it's one of the only things we get to control. And if you start to be a little bit mindful of where your thoughts are going, you'll catch yourself going down a train of thought you don't want to go down. And if you can turn it around, you know, quickly enough before it gets some momentum behind it, you really can change your reality.
So the ultimate goal, you want to help other people just to help them love themselves and take time for themselves.
Exactly, exactly. Because if you don't take time for yourself, you have very little to give others. So, you know, it's very important to put yourself really top of your priority list so that you can then, you have some inner resources to give to the people that you love.
Well, you've got a great philosophy of life, Jeannie. It certainly, we can feel it in your voice. We can feel it in your passion, your enthusiasm for life. Even though you've been through some incredibly, even dark places because of the great challenges in your family and in your own life, here you are, and life, the future, what do you think about the future?
The future, the better it gets, the better it gets. It's my life's a fairy tale, honestly. I live in a beautiful home with the people that I love. My children are doing incredibly well. One will be going off to college next year, and the other the following year, and they're just wonderful kids, and they're doing really well in life, and what more can you ask for? You know, life is good.
That's for sure. Things I wish my mother had said, or maybe she did. We've been listening to Jeannie Lee Perrone. Jeannie, tell us how to get your book.
Well, my book is available online through Balboa Press, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. You can also check out my website. I have signed copies available on JeannieLeePerrone.com. Check out my Facebook page, too, while you're at it.
Well, thank you, Jeannie, for being with us on Indie Book Publishing.
Thank you very much, Steve. Good to talk to you.
And this interview has been brought to you by Balboa Press.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.